This is an iHeart podcast.
Let's talk about the system tonight. That's an important conversation to have. We're also going to celebrate an anniversary, a wonderful anniversary, the overturning of Roe versus Wade. We have all that, so much more coming up tonight on I'm Right. Let's talk about the system, shall we? It's what I call it. And I realize we have a bunch of new viewers. We haven't talked about this in a while, so we're going to, because there's a billionaire, Mark Cuban, in the news, making a bunch of news for saying a bunch of stupid things. So before we get to Mark Cuban, let's just do a little rehash. What is the system? Well, for one, that's just my word for it. Many people call it the regime or the cathedral. What is it really? Well, you see, societies, all societies, big ones, small ones, doesn't matter. I should have big ones, small, whatever. Big ones, small ones, it doesn't matter. They all are held up by their institutions. The institutions in your society are the pillars on which your society rests. Your society will have an education institution, a government institution, religious institutions, entertainment institutions, media, information, the way information is passed back and forth, institutions. These are pillars that hold up every society, right? And when you get to a place where we are, where every single pillar has been captured by the same sick demonic religion, Marxism, what you have is now a system. You see, ideally in a society, this is how it would work, and this is how it did work for the longest time in America. Ideally, the different pillars will keep each other in check, you see. So if the education pillar turns hostile to your society, America sucks! Well, if you're in a society that is set up right and operating good, the media will see that, jump on it, pounce on them, call them out for it. The media will act as a corrective agent for the education system. Understand? The other pillars, too, will get it. If it's the education system that's bad, the religion will step up. Not that, but our tax-exempt status will step up and say, no, this is evil, demonic, wrong. The different pillars will keep each other in check. But once they all get captured by the same way of thinking, the same sick religion, well, now there's nobody to keep them in check. Now the system, now it's become a system, now it is all-powerful. It decides what is good, what is bad. The words you can use, the words you can't use. The system is the one that now determines culture, right, wrong, everything in our society. And this it's a communist system. It's worked this way in every communist country from the Soviet Union, Cambodia, you name it. Once one party, the sick Marxist party, controls everything, well, then everything has to serve them. And that brings us to Mark Cuban. In fact, not just him specifically, he's just an idiot, kind of. We'll explain in a moment. That brings us to billionaires. Let's pause for a moment before we get to billionaires and poor people, though. You know, communists have always attacked the middle class, always, forever. Small businesses, you know, we've lost a third of America's small businesses in just the last few years. That's on purpose. Why do they attack the middle class? Because the middle class have something the super wealthy and super poor do not. They have independence. They have enough money that they can be independent from the system. They don't need handouts, they don't need favors, but they don't have so much money that they need access to the system in order to maintain their standard of living. You see Bob's plumber shop doing real well. He's got a few extra trucks, 10 employees now. He makes a great living. He never has to go to the system for a favor. So the system has to crush Bob. But let's say his plumbing company really took off and he became a billionaire like Mark Cuban. Well, Mark Cuban's been getting all kinds of publicity recently for saying a bunch of dumb things. And they are dumb things, dumb, dishonest things on all over his social media. Does this all the time. Of course, it's always against Republicans, you see. And some of these things are, honestly, they're verifiable lies. Remember, if you're one of these people You exist in and promote a world of make-believe at all times. Does your liberal Aunt Peggy believe that Donald Trump called Nazis very fine people in Charlottesville? Remember this. Remember, the most amazing thing about that is what Trump said about Charlottesville is on camera. It's not like we have to hear from a guy who heard from a guy who heard from a guy. We've all watched him say it. In case you're wondering about the very fine people thing, this is what Trump said in Charlottesville.
I do think there's blame. Yes, I think there's blame on both sides. You look at both sides. I think there's blame on both sides, and I have no doubt about it, and you don't have any doubt about it either. And you had some very bad people in that group. But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
It's on camera. It's on camera. And yet, that verifiable lie was just repeated recently by Mark Cuban. Shoot, the president of the United States of America has admitted many times that he ran for president based on that lie.
When did you get to 100%? When did you know this is something that I have to do for yourself?
Charlottesville. When those folks came out of the fields carrying torches with contorted faces and carrying Nazi flags. When the president was asked about it, they asked what he thought. He said, I thought there were very fine people on both sides. No president, sitting president, has ever said anything like that.
The lie, a verifiable lie. So let's go back to Mark Cuban. Why would he repeat it? Because I see a lot of people saying, what is he, stupid? Mark Cuban must be an idiot. No, Mark Cuban is a billionaire. Every single society that's gone through a communist takeover, as ours is going through now, has had the billionaires, most of them, help the communists with their takeover. You would think it'd be the opposite, right? After all, these surely are robust capitalists. They'll fight against the commies. Well, no, you see. Now that Bob's plumbing is Bob's billionaire plumbing, Bob is in a whole different realm. He's no longer the small business trying to make it by, buying a new house, putting in a pool this year. Bob now lives a life of private jets, international business travel, capital. He needs money at all times, money flowing here, flowing there. I need another $100 million. We're starting this LLC to pair with this. Bob needs his kids to get into Harvard. Bob needs his second cousin's brother's mom to get an internship with Joe Biden at the White House. Once you're part of the system, access to high society, you have to maintain that. And the only way you get to maintain that, the only way you get to keep your system membership card is you say the things the system demands you say, even if they're outright lies. If the system comes to you and says, hey, Mr. Billionaire, that sky is green, isn't it? We need you to repeat that. Well, then you will repeat it. Because you need to maintain access to all the people running things. That's why so many billionaires, Bill Gates, Cuban, all the losers, always seem to say dumb things from time to time. They're not dumb. They're maintaining their system membership card. That's why they use the appropriate language, too. Language. Let's talk about language for a moment, actually. See, Simone Sanders is one of these dirty communists. She's been a filthy communist for a long time. She went on television and they were talking about illegals. Now, I want you to watch something and set aside your anger for a moment. Watch something and notice, watch what she does here. It's brilliant.
What is the difference between an illegal immigrant who unfortunately engages in that activity?
And we don't like that. I want to be clear. We don't use the term illegal. So yeah,
they're
illegal aliens.
Undocumented individuals.
What a weird thing to jump in on, right? We don't use that term. Right away, it was weird. She even interrupted him. Wasn't that rude? Why would she do that? Well, communists understand something very, very well. And the right does not. The right is a million years behind the left on this, and we need to catch up. Communists understand the power of words, of language. language for you, for me. I'm the same way. I struggle with this. When we speak, we just speak. Whatever's on your mind, speak honestly. Whatever words come to mind. Language, though, is powerful if it's used correctly. There are a million quotes about this. It's a weapon. Language, the words you use become thoughts to people, and thoughts people have become truth. You see, when the left speaks, because they're a demonic religion of destruction and domination, they understand that they're destroying things, and they understand they can never let Normie Norm catch on to that. And so when they speak, they try to carefully choose just the right words to make sure Norm stays fast asleep. Hey, watching the game, didn't see that. That's why the left uses all the words they use. Abortion, we're gonna get to Roe versus Wade talk, becomes women's reproductive rights. Illegals who are violating the sovereignty of this country. Well, when you stop calling them illegals and you start calling them migrants, they sound like just people caught up in the circumstances, almost like an innocent flock of birds flying south for the winter. They're migrating, of course. Why are they doing this? Well, they're flooding the country with illegals to destroy the United States of America. They can't let Norm and Norm catch on. So instead, they use words like migrants, trying to keep Norm fast asleep while they destroy. Now, you go back to someone like Mark Cuban, he'll use the words migrant. Shoot, at this point in time, the right is so full of this loser mentality because we don't get what they're doing. Half the right uses the word migrant now. Migrants, we got a migrant crisis. Migrant, that, migrant, that. Adopting their language. That's the power of language, you see. And it is so powerful that everyone works for the system. Everyone has to use the language the system demands. Joe Biden is the president of the United States of America. He's in charge, after all, isn't he? Remember when Joe Biden got a little flustered at the State of the Union and called someone an illegal? I think it was 24, 48 hours he was sitting down on camera apologizing for it.
You use the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Lake and Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented.
Notice the lecture he gets from one of the system's journalists. Hey, I'm looking at the transcripts here, Joe, and you used a word we're not supposed to use. You called an illegal. Would you like to address that now, Joe? We're giving you a chance right here. This is your chance on national television. You want to right that wrong? And of course, President Poopy Pants. Oh, no, I shouldn't have said that. Definitely undocumented. And this is not about illegal immigration or Joe Biden or Simone Sanders or anything. This is about the system, the system's control, and language is such a critical part of that control. So allow this to be a lesson to all of us, you, me, everybody, as we wrap this thing up here and move on to everything else. Never, ever, 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 ever use the language of the communist. He has selected his words intentionally. They're designed to deceive. They're designed to destroy. And if you're just trying to be nice using the language he has chosen, then you are actually helping him destroy. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Speaking of the system, you know, Democrats can be bounced from the system too. You see, the system only exists to serve itself, to protect itself. That's really its only purpose. And there are Democrats who, if they make their way into high society, they go from being street animals to elite animals, they can create problems for the system. And the system will simply purge them if they do. Jamal Bowman is one of those Democrats. Deborah Leah is going to join us next to discuss Jamal Bowman. Before she does, let's discuss Lone Star Transfer. Lone Star Transfer, the company that will get you out of your timeshare. That timeshare you don't want anymore. You're tired of paying the fees. It grades on you now. Those annual fees have gone up, haven't they? Doubled. And now it's even harder to get in now. I know how it is. Why don't you get out? Oh, they told me I can't. They told me I'm in for life. I know what they said. Call Lone Star Transfer and find out what they say. You know how successful Lone Star is at getting people out? 99%. Legally and permanently, they will set you free. Make a phone call. It's a phone call. 844-310-2646. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
We are here for our brother, Jamal Bowman. We want to turn out the vote. We are turning out. We are calling our friends in Tuckahoe, in White Plains, in New Rochelle, in Yonkers, and telling them to vote for Jamal Bowman.
Ceasefire now, y'all. That's what we're doing. Ceasefire now. Let's get it popping. Let's get it popping. Let's change the world. It's the many versus the money. We're going to win. Let's go, baby.
We're going to win. We're going to take on AIPAC. I'm going to kick some Wall Street ass. So let's go.
Stop the bombs.
Sorry. I'm sorry. When I was watching that, you know what I pictured? I pictured my dad. My dad watching those two. You know what? I'm going to send him that just to get his reaction and tell him these people were members of Congress. We got to get it popping. Joining me now, Deborah Leah, conservative commentator. Okay, Deborah, I admit, and I'm old, I don't even understand what exactly I was looking at there. What was happening here?
I mean, I don't even know. I'm 24 years old. I think somebody must have told AOC that she was filming a music video for a new rap song because her mannerisms flying all over, trying to be cool, dropping the G when there's an ING. Does she know where she is? She must check in with Joe Biden because these people have no idea where they are. Last time I checked, this was a campaign stop to get out the vote. I don't know what this behavior, I don't know what she's intending, but she's just absolutely crazy. And of course, she says in this video, she doesn't care if you live in the district or not. Just come out and vote. She may as well say, if you're staying at the Roosevelt Hotel or any other migrant camps, just come on through. It doesn't matter. We won't ask questions. We are fighting the Jews, after all. This is just a prime example of a dog whistle from Jamal Bowman, the embarrassment to American Congress and America at large. He says, ceasefire now, ceasefire now. They always love to say on the left that Trump is pushing out dog whistles to Republicans. This is, couldn't be a clearer example of him trying to dog whistle anti-Semites. Truly, just come out and vote for me. What is a censured congressman who sat on the Energy Committee? What is he going to do with the ceasefire? How is he going to enact a ceasefire? Does he think pulling the fire alarm is going to start the ceasefire? Because that didn't open any doors either. I hate to break it to him. This guy is an embarrassment, and he should really be focusing on the issues in his district, like the economy, school choice, taxes, crime, things that actually affect Americans that he wants the privilege to represent. It is an honor to be a sitting congressman and to represent Americans. And he should be talking about the issues that are near and dear to our heart, on our soil, and not a foreign war in another country.
Okay, so explain to me why this guy is getting a primary challenge. Everyone knows the Democrats have gone hardcore commie. He's a dirty hardcore commie. What did he do wrong to anger the powers that be so much that Hillary Clinton is endorsing his primary challenger?
So I think what obviously he did wrong is being an anti-Semite. That's first up. Being incompetent is probably the second one. But overall, the district has been broken up. And now this has become a kind of touchstone election because there is a large Black vote and there is a large Jewish vote in this area. And so I think that's really creating the divide and the challenge for him. But if he thinks that every minority or every Black person in this country supports Palestine or supports these people storming our streets and raiding our college campuses, he is absolutely wrong. Every single person, regardless of color, race, religion, or class, has the ability to believe and think for themselves. That's what I believe as a conservative, a young, proud Jewish American. That is what I believe. And so for him, I think he's just trying. This is his last dying shot, throwing anything at the wall, because he's really not confident in his chances of winning this election. And I truly hope he doesn't. I hope that not only Jews, but people who stand with humanity, people who stand with America, vote this man out. They deserve to have a leader that actually cares about issues on American soil, and not this guy who literally pulled a fire alarm to stop Congress from passing a bill to keep the government open and stop it from shutting down. This guy has not cared about Americans. He doesn't care about Americans now. He clearly just cares about his own self-aggrandizing.
You had a video that blew up all over the internet, some confrontation with one of these dirty street commies. Here it was for those who haven't seen it.
The same scarf that women wore You're wearing the same scarf that people wore when they raped women. I think that's disgusting.
At least I'm not wearing a sweater.
A sweater of Think Happy Thoughts? You're wearing a keffiyeh? And you support terrorists who raped women? That they wore when they raped women to death? You're disgusting and you should be ashamed of yourself? You stand with terrorists. You stand with terrorists and you're disgusting.
So, Leah, let me see if I understand this right. Even the white lesbians are standing with Palestine? Do I have that right?
Apparently. It's hard to keep track these days. Every intersectional group is coming out and saying, we love Hamas, we love Palestine. And I pointed that out. I had a lot of people. First of all, I didn't expect this to go so viral. Yes, I have a following, but I asked my friends, do I confront this person? And I recorded it just to send it in our group chat. And they were all like, post it, people need to see it. And to my surprise, got millions of views on Twitter, so a lot of love. But I pointed out the fact that this woman was lesbian to highlight the hypocrisy of supporting an organization, a terrorist group, not even an organization, a terrorist group, who massacred and brutalized, abused, and raped both men and women. But you want to stand, you love women, you should not support people who raped and burned women to death. And the keffiyeh, she claims it's a religious garment, which just highlights how little she knows about the history of anything and just gets all of her information from TikTok or Instagram or any other stupid social media platform, because there is a history to the keffiyeh and it's tied to the Bedouin culture. The Bedouin people living in the Arabian Peninsula, they're amazing people. They've hosted me for a weekend before. They are beautiful people. And it has nothing to do with the keffiyeh that's worn nowadays, which is tied to the Arab revolt, the Intifada, uprising, massacres, Yasser Arafat wore it. This is not a peaceful religious garment or symbol in the way that my Magen David is. So for her, a white woman wearing a pride pin to be supporting this group is just so hypocritical. It's just so hip. It's crazy. I can't even put it into words because it's just crazy. These people would never support her.
Deborah, the college situation in the country, we'll just call it a situation, is really bad. And we see from all the recent polls and things that come out, it's eating women alive. Women are going hard left. The young men are going hard right. At least we have that. But it's eating women alive. You came out of that culture, obviously, just fine. Why and why aren't others? Why is this chewing women up? Why are they going so hard left?
I think it's a two-prong answer because people, especially women, have always leaned more left, but especially now with the Palestine-Israel conflict and people siding with Palestine and Hamas, essentially, even Iran, which is just a horrific oppressor of women, the Iranian regime. But I think the first prong is that for me personally, I was raised in a very strong Jewish community in New York. I was taught to have very strong values and morals. And I've always been the kind of person that if you put me in a room with 100 people who don't think like me, I'm going to walk out of that room being even more confident in my own beliefs and not assimilate to any of the ideas around me. And I think I'm just very grateful for my parents for instilling that kind of strong belief system in me. But as far as women nowadays on college campuses, I think this is a lack of religion problem. When God and community gets taken away, something has to fill that cavity. It doesn't just not exist. And this is essentially a new belief system, wokeism. They get mad that we want to put the Ten Commandments back in school, but they're fine to have BLM, Palestine Pride posters littering the college campuses and the hallways of high schools. So I really think that people are turning to a community. And this is kind of a community in itself of people who are self-identified as oppressed, and they believe that they are helping other oppressed people because Jews are successful. So we must be the oppressors, according to them. And I think it's really just a self-serving way for people to feel accepted when they don't. If we look at who's attending these rallies, sorry to be frank, but it's the losers and the rejects of society. No successful people are going out and storming children's hospital centers or destroying the tree lighting ceremony in New York City or the Thanksgiving Day parade. All of these things are being done by people who clearly were never accepted or loved enough growing up. And now they want to kind of get back at the normies. And they're going to have a rude awakening when this comes back to bite them in 2 years, when they're not going to be able to get a job. They're going to have pissed away people who were good people, who just stood with humanity, who did not stand with terror. And I think overall it's really sad, and that's why we need now more than ever to put religion back into the schools, back into society and culture, and have people believing in good things again that are above and greater than themselves. That's really what this war is. They believe that by supporting Palestine or getting involved in this conflict, yeah, they're becoming a part of something larger than themselves, and that's what religion offers. So go to church, go to synagogue, go wherever you need to get your religious fill, but people's cups are empty and we need to start pouring them again.
Yeah. And they're all ugly, too. Maybe that's why they were rejected. Deborah, thank you so much. I appreciate it so much. All right. Look, we have to talk about something important. Let's talk about your coffee. And I always tell you about blackout coffee, don't I? Blackout coffee this and blackout coffee that. And I think people get the impression that blackout coffee will only send you whole beans. That's what I get, the whole beans. But don't worry. You know they have the K-Cups too, right? The K-Cups. And maybe you're wondering what that FPC is on there. You see, blackout coffee, while everyone else is partnering with Planned Parenthood, they're partnering with the Firearms Policy Coalition. Why? Because they fight for your Second Amendment rights. How many coffee companies are fighting to make sure you can remain free? 20% off your first order. Blackoutcoffee.com/Jesse. Go get the best coffee ever that shares your values delivered to you. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
We have a million miles to go to take back this country. I acknowledge that. You acknowledge that. It's okay. It's okay. And one of the main things we have to focus on is education. And I know that sounds heady and nerdy, and I know I'm the last one in the world to educate anyone, but this is what I mean. People complain about the economy all the time, the spending, the dollar, inflation, interest rates, all these other things. But you start to ask those same people, why? Why are we going through this? Why this? Why inflation? Why that? And they're lost because they're not educated. They don't understand basic civics, how economies work. Our lack of education is leading directly to our destruction as a nation. Someone who's putting out some fascinating stuff about this, Dr. Carrie Ingram, of course, of the Independent Women's Forum and senior fellow at the Discovery Institute. Doctor, you're the one who's done the work, not me, but I love what you're doing. Explain.
Well, Jesse, it's a pleasure to be with you. What we have in our education system today is a system that is not designed to serve children, that is not designed to represent a pluralistic society, but it is run by bureaucrats at the Department of Education in Washington, D.C., and controlled by teacher unions who are in lockstep with the Democrat Party. And how that relationship works, Jesse, is the teacher unions, they take money from the millions of teachers in our system from their paychecks in the form of member dues. And then they give enormous sums of money to a single political party, which allows them to maintain the monopoly on public education, as well as to have political demands met. And we saw this during COVID with the school shutdowns. It was the teacher unions. And in some states, they kept schools closed to children spanning 3 school years. Why do they keep schools closed? They wanted irrelevant demands met. Medicare for all, defunding the police, and a moratorium on charter schools had nothing to do with the education of children. But they're able to maintain that power because of the money, as well as funneling it to those Democrats. They also influence how students are taught and what teachers teach. And it's ideas that are of a single political party. So students exit this 13 years of K-12 education indoctrination, and they're eligible to vote. And Jesse, what are they gonna vote for? They're not gonna vote for capitalism or free markets, but they're gonna vote for the ideas that they've been taught year in and year out through our public education system, which is socialism, Marxism, this radical gender ideology, critical race theory, things that are at the detriment of our country. And that's why we are where we are today.
Carrie, the Ten Commandments getting put back in the schools in Louisiana obviously blew up everybody's media timeline over the past week or so, which is odd because it's very obvious there are religious symbols all over America's classrooms, Black Lives Matter flags and tranny flags and every other flag. Why are they so upset about the Ten Commandments?
Jesse, nothing could be more ironic than trying to keep religion out of schools. You just like you said, Black Lives Matter flags, this radical gender ideology, these are things that are not just taught in public education, you know, at the end of the school day or tucked in a very small part. They are now intentionally woven throughout every subject, through policies, through practices. Enormous amounts of money are spent on teacher training of these radical ideas, this new woke religion. And so to say the basic foundation of our country, of these principles, you've got the Ten Commandments posted in historical buildings in U.S. capitals all over our country. So to have those ideas under attack when on the flip side, just this radical religion of woke ideology is pumped into students all throughout the school day is just nonsense. Our country was founded on Judeo-Christian ideas and principles, and we need to return to basic morality in our country of right and wrong, teaching that to students and holding students accountable. What we see on college campuses today is nonsense. These students who are taking over buildings, and you have the university leadership letting these radicals dictate safety for other students at their universities, it is not going well in our country. We need to get back to teaching the truth, teaching basic right and wrong, and the Ten Commandments outlines that.
How do we get education back in the hands of the states? I mean, ideally, we want it back in the hands of the parents, but we definitely want the dirty feds out of it. Is that something that's even possible?
Well, great things are happening throughout our country. 12 states now have enacted universal or near universal school choice. And what that means is that parents have the opportunity to take their taxpayer money that goes towards education and allocate it to the provider of their choice. So it's breaking up this public school monopoly. And that's what it's going to take. More parents leaving so the teacher unions lose their power and allow families to decide what's in the best interest of their children. And so no longer are the majority of Americans, as school choice continues to play out in our country and break down the monopoly, coming out with just this one political ideology. But we'll be able to see that there's economic implications for students, there's societal benefits. And students, as they enter the workforce, they're going to be prepared and they're going to be equipped, because parents, they're not going to put up with a school closed for 3 years or their child not learning basic academics. And so giving the money back to families is the best option. Now, 12 states have done that thus far, more on the way. And so today we see 17 million students are now eligible out of the 52 million in our country for the school that their parents choose for them.
That's friggin' wonderful. Doctor, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Come back soon. All right. I forgot to wish you a happy anniversary. It is the 2-year anniversary of the overturning of Roe versus Wade. And like every other battle, we have a bunch left to fight. Every other cultural battle we win, we win it, and we look, and there's like a million more. Well, there's a million more of these, too, but it's still a good day. We're going to talk to Abby Johnson about where we are with the pro-life movement in America, how it's been since the overturning of Roe versus Wade, what she wants to see in the Trump debate this Thursday. We'll get to Abby in a moment. Before we get to Abby, let's talk about your good night's sleep. You had one, right? You've been sleeping 8-9 hours straight every night, right? It's no excuse anymore now that Dream Powder is here. Yeah, look. I understand there are a million products out there that can help you sleep. How many of them have you waking up the next day feeling actually refreshed? Not very many. In fact, I've only ever had one. Everything I've ever taken to sleep has made me feel about like this the next day when I wake up, no matter how long I sleep. But then Dream Powder came along. It's all natural. There's natural stuff in it. It's a cup of hot chocolate. Flavored hot chocolate I have before bed, just sip on a little cup of hot chocolate and then drift off to sleep and sleep like a little bitty baby and wake up feeling great. You want 40% off? Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Happy anniversary. It is a wonderful anniversary today. It is the two-year anniversary of the overturning of Roe versus Wade. And to celebrate such a wonderful day, we are going to bring on the CEO of Then There Were None Ministry, former Planned Parenthood director, now probably the best advocate in the country for life, my friend Abby Johnson. Abby, it is a good day, is it not?
It is a good day, Jesse. It's a good day. It's always a good day to celebrate life. And it was a good day when Roe was thrown into the ash heap of history. It was a good day.
Yes, it was. I know that we have a million miles ahead of us, though, to take back the culture. We may have gotten the court decision we wanted, but the truth is we have a country that is in love with abortion, especially the women of the country have, over the years, have grown to love abortion. It's become ingrained in our culture. How far away are we from getting them back into reality?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to turn us into this like butterflies and rainbows thing here. We're pretty far away. We're pretty far away from where we need to be. I don't know that we're as a movement, as a pro-life movement, I don't know that we're better since Roe has been overturned. You know, we see that people have become more radicalized, I think, since Roe has been overturned. People have become enraged because let's be honest, Jesse. We know that abortion is a sacrament to the left. They love it. They love abortion. They love killing babies. And so now that they don't have this federal right to murder babies, they're angry, they're enraged. And so now we see, you know, state constitutions being ratified. We didn't have that before. We have abortion pills going into every single state across this country, accessible to every woman, turning, you know, every bathroom essentially into an abortion facility. Late term abortions are on the rise, higher than they've ever been. Abortion is actually up in this country. It's higher than it has been in over a decade. So, I mean, as a culture, as a movement, I don't know that we're better off, but I do know that overturning Roe was righting a wrong. Roe really was the thing that set our culture in the wrong direction by accepting legal abortion. And so I think in order to right that course, we had to undo that legal wrong. And now it's a cultural battle, you know, changing hearts and minds. And we have to do that primarily through education.
Abby, as someone who was famously, formerly on that side, can you help us understand why they love it? Like, I get it. Some young woman, scared, selfish, whatever she may be, wants to kill her baby because she's worried about, as you've pointed out before, getting drunk on spring break or thinks it's going to ruin her life. I understand putting your head down, crap, I got to go do it. It's not something I promote, but I get it. What I don't understand is loving it. Who loves it? But they very clearly do. Why?
You know, I think what we haven't talked about enough in the movement, honestly, because the pro-life movement has really, and let's be honest. I mean, politicians have really tried to secularize politics, and they've really tried to secularize the movement, our pro-life movement. But scripture tells us that there's nothing new under the sun. People have been destroying innocent human life since Old Testament times. Okay, this is not new. They used to, you know, they used to take babies and walk them up, you know, hundreds of steps and throw them into burning fires. You know, for what? For crops, for, you know, success. They thought they could do it and rain would fall from the sky. They would sacrifice them to idol gods for idol worship. And that's really what we're doing today. There is a spirit of child sacrifice that is still in this culture, that is still in this country. And people think, you know, oh, well, the abortion industry is doing it for money. It's money, it's money. And yeah, they do want to make money. Yes, there is that financial component to it. But why do they love it? Well, because it's what Satan loves. Satan loves child sacrifice. And even if the women don't understand when they're walking into these clinics that they are participating in child sacrifice, that doesn't matter to the enemy, because the enemy still knows that it's child sacrifice. They are spilling innocent blood. And he loves that. He enjoys it. He celebrates it. And when you're working in a place that dark, you don't even understand what you're doing sometimes. You don't even understand that you're participating in child sacrifice. Let me tell you something, Jesse. The enemy blinds you to what is happening right in front of you. I mean, I'm not a bad person, okay? I'm not an evil person. But I did participate in evil things. And sometimes I look back on my time at Planned Parenthood. I look back at the things that I did. You know, I held instruments in my hands and pieced body parts of babies back together. I looked at those things in a dish, and I didn't see them as evil. How could I not have seen that? I'm a mother of 8 children now. And I look at my children and I think, how could I have not seen that? That is the enemy. That is how Satan literally will blind you to the evil that is directly in front of you, that you're looking at in a dish. And that is how they can celebrate it. That is why they celebrate it.
I think that's a great answer. I think it's exactly what it is. There's a spiritual component to this that you can't deny. If you do deny it, you'll never understand it. It's the bottom line. Until you accept you're dealing with evil. Okay, Abby, we've got politics obviously going on. It's a presidential election year. Joe Biden debating Trump this Thursday. I don't think anybody thinks Trump's going to come out and be some hardcore pro-life warrior. That's not who he is. That's not his belief system. I get that. I understand that. I disagree, but I get that. What do we want to see on Thursday? What do we expect to see?
I mean, gosh, I would, you know, I would love to see some sort of statement that Trump is willing to sign whatever pro-life bill comes across his desk. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't really care what Trump's beliefs are, but I don't care what his individual beliefs are, if I'm perfectly honest. But if Congress passed a bill that limited abortion in somehow, you would expect a Republican president to sign that bill, right? And as of right now, he has said that there are certain bills he wouldn't sign as a Republican president. that he doesn't, he believes heartbeat bills are disgusting. That, you know, he doesn't want to sign bills to significantly limit abortion. And that's incredibly disappointing coming from a supposed Republican candidate. And so I would hope that he has been talking to and working with enough pro-life groups over the past few weeks that he has seen sort of the flaw in his thinking, at least publicly, the words that have been coming out of his mouth, that they have been so strategically improper that in the debate, he would at least say, look, if the will of the people is that we limit abortion at a certain number of weeks, I will sign whatever bill comes across my desk. Strategically, that is what he needs to say, because Trump has lost such a large portion of pro-life voters at this point. If he expects to get any of them back, that is the message that he needs to put forward on Thursday.
I hope to hear it. Abby, you are the best. Come back anytime. I appreciate you. Well, it's heavy. We got to talk about it, right? You know what else we have to do? We have to lighten the mood. Next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And one of the things that I don't understand about today, about this era we live in, is how nonsensical we are about animals. And I need to clarify, I like animals. I am a zoo fan. I like animals. I don't like animals to suffer. Yeah, I like animals. But we have societies now, different parts of our society, where we allow wild animals to take over, and we apparently act like we're totally helpless to do anything about it. I remember it wasn't long ago, there was a story, it was out of Florida. They were complaining because a bunch of peacocks had taken over the town. What do we do about the peacocks? They're attacking cars. Nobody owns a 12-gauge? Sorry, I like peacocks just fine. The second you dent my car, I'll just go kill them all. Apparently, Staten Island doesn't know how to deal with turkeys. Great dog you got there. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.